initiating during the course of this month a very big project in OR Tambo district, an area that is wholly owned, that is wholly communal land, where we have discovered that there's potential to grow in the extent of some 20,000 hectares of soya beans there. But we are saying people are not going to export, they are not going to grow the soya beans and export it to be processed elsewhere. It must be grown in OR Tambo. It must be processed in OR Tambo, packaged in OR Tambo, and whatever surplus and that they can produce, it can be exported outside of that. Next slide, please. Next slide. Yes, I think here again, this is just the breakdown of the various grains items, showing the different parts of the country where we are planning to zoom into those particular areas to upscale production in those areas, particularly now that we've got big companies, private companies that have demonstrated willingness to provide offtake agreements to our farmers. So our farmers will no longer just produce and then their products just rot in the fields because there's no storage facilities, no packaging facilities, and so on. So the agriculture and agro-processing master plan, we plan to decentralize that infrastructure into these former homelands where the potential of land, of growing these commodities is, where there are people who are already producing these commodities, but they can also process them in those particular areas. I think we can move on to the next slide. I think we have made the point about the potential of development of communal land. Now, the question says the future of the fate of communal land as contribution to state land, as contribution to land redistribution. And I think I've addressed the issue that land redistribution has got no role insofar, or communal land has got no role in land redistribution because that land is already owned. We must address the inequity between the 30% and the difference. Rather, the state has identified some 1.3 million hectares of state-owned land, which is not necessarily communal land. This is land that was acquired as part of the consolidation of the former homeland, but throughout the years, various successive apartheid governments have acquired land, and this land is now sitting in the balance sheet of various state departments. So 1.3 million hectares was identified. The balance of the 1.3 is under claim. There's a restitution process that is underway. We'll talk very quickly about that. But we have identified 700,000 hectares of underutilized or vacant state land, very much neighboring some of the former homelands. It is this land that the president announced in the State of the Nation address that it will be allocated to women, to youth, to people with disabilities, and military veterans. So the department is working on allocating this particular plan to those categories of beneficiaries. As part of the process of allocating the 700,000 hectares, the department has already developed a beneficiary selection and land allocation policy. This policy was approved by cabinet in December for public consultations. We've gone out on public consultations. We've received public comments. We've taken it back to the IMC. And then from IMC, we'll take it to the cabinet system, from cabinet committees up to cabinet, so that as we allocate the 700,000 hectares and any other land we'll allocate into the future, those categories of women, 50%, youth, 40%, people with disability, and military veterans being targeted through that disposal process. Next slide, please. Now, one of the preconditions, I think the next slide just deals with more of the process. We've got to make sure that the land is advertised. We will not take it for granted that if we see a few cattle on that particular land that land is encumbered. We want to determine, even in the land that is encumbered, who is on that land, on what basis. It could well be that in the former homelands, the old magistrates or the former Bantustan government may have given permission, or even traditional authorities themselves may have given a permission to some of these people. In those instances, we are going to regularize that. But otherwise, the land will be advertised to ensure that we reach the target. So we'll explore all the various media platforms in terms of making sure that there is nationwide awareness, particularly for communities in the provinces where the land is located. This is what this slide is really talking about. But the minister will soon be making an announcement about when is the application process going to open with regards to the 700,000 hectares. Next slide, please. The second, well, this is the critical part. I think this is what the president also emphasized. In the past, we have generally allocated people land without making sure that they get the requisite training in terms of making sure that they properly use the land. As part of a precondition for allocation of land, which is in the beneficiary selection and land allocation policy, is that there will be compulsory training that is going to be provided to a range of farmers. We accept that there could be people that have been farming for decades, but those that are going to be brought on board to be allocated that land must be subjected to training that will be made available by the different institutions, particularly the agencies of the department that are listed, such as the ARC, the OPP, NAMEC, and also using agricultural colleges in training them in those various areas, such as production, giving them technical skills, business, entrepreneurial, marketing, and so on, but also managing the safety, the health, animal health, because as you know, some parts of our country are prone to certain animal diseases such as foot and mouth. So for them to really participate in this particular economy, they've got to be trained in this particular area. Next slide, please. Here we're just basically setting out the type of training that I've quickly run through, and which will be customized, obviously, depending on the level of experience and the knowledge of those who apply and become successful, then the training will be tailor-made to meet the needs of those farmers. The next slide just basically gives you what we have done to date as part of that 700,000 hectares. Those are the provinces where already 135,000 hectares has been allocated. That gives you the breakdown. Those are the women, 160, that have benefited, youth, 114, and one person with disability. The rest, the next slide deals with the rest of the breakdown of the hectares in terms of where they are. As you will see, the biggest number of the hectares for good reason, for obvious reasons, that is going to be Northwest, where there's going to be a large number of those hectares. You will see that in the Eastern Cape, there's a part of that land, largely because some of it has, people have moved on it and occupied it. Free State, there isn't a large part of state land that is vacant. Those are the numbers. Then you'll have KwaZulu-Natal, Mpumalanga, and then and some part in Northern Cape. The next one, the next slide really deals with the land that I spoke about as part of this 1.3. We have found that approximately 360,000 hectares of the state land is actually under claim. And the next slide will deal with the different categories of the claims, because as you will see that from the analysis that has been done by the commission, some of these claims, about 44,000 hectares of this land we are saying is under claim. These are new order claims. In other words, these are the claims that were lodged when the claims were reopened in 2014. So the courts have said, don't process those claims, deal with the old order claims. Then again, we then further categorize and break down the rest of the land, how many hectares amounting to how many properties, and how far is the commission gone with regard to the processing and resolution of those claims of the 360,000 hectares. The next slide, please. Then the next slide will show the timeline that the commission has set for itself to conclude its processes, because the commission has got to follow the law in terms of researching the claim, verifying the claim, the claimants, and all of those processes. And these are the targets by which the commission hopes to have concluded research on all of the hectares that on at least 117,000 hectares of the state land. This is the state land that is not going to be part of redistribution, but it's going to be at redressing the imbalances of the past, because there were people who were removed from the state land. In fact, the fact that this land today is owned by the state, the previous owners of this land were removed by previous government. So restitution is giving back to the rightful owners their land. That is the last slide, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DG. Before I give to members, let me check with Deputy Minister. Do we have anything to add? Or you're fine? DM, are you fine? I can give back to the members to ask questions.
I'm fine, Chairperson. You can give it back to members for questions. Thanks very much.
Okay. Thank you, members. Now is your time for asking questions. Oh, yes. I'll start with Honorable Smith.
Can I start, Honorable Chair?
Honorable Clute. Honorable Laboskasuni. Itumeleng Tuve. And Honorable Machibe. Honorable Smith, Honorable Arnold, Lute, yes, you can continue.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, I don't know what to say, because this presentation, touch very softly on what we've actually requested as a committee, and then it resembles a lot the district type of model, or the agri-parks model type of approach that doesn't really address the question about the future of land within tribal areas. Now, I am concerned, firstly, that the department says that the land that's in communal areas or old traditional areas or whatever is not subject to restitution because it's already in the hands of the owners. Now, he contradicts himself by also saying that the land legally is in is registered in the name of the state, and that it is not registered in the name of the community. So that's a redistribution process. So I want to refer firstly to our constitution. If we go to Chapter 2, Bill of Rights, Section 25, Subsection 5 and 6, it reads as follows. The state must, not can or should, but must take reasonable legislative and other measures within its available resources to foster conditions which enable citizens to gain access to land on an equitable basis. Subsection 6 continues. A person or community whose tenure of land is legally insecure, as a result of past racially discriminatory laws or practices, is entitled to the extent provided by an Act of Parliament, okay, either to tenure which is legally secure or comparable redress. Right. So with that said, is this land within communal areas at all legally secure? Does the communities, because it said that the communities who stay on the land is the owners of the land. Okay, but in the same breath, we're talking about tribal authorities. Now, tribal authorities represents customary law, customs, culture, you know, language, all those type of things that they represent, okay? And which they've got roles and responsibilities, again, mentioned in the Constitution. Not rights and privileges, but roles and responsibilities. So, if this land is then managed by tribal authorities on behalf of the communities, then I'm asking myself the following question. These tribal authorities, are they, and authority is another question, because it's tribal leadership. Because authority, we've got one authority, and the authority is government, which is an elected body. And that's why I'm coming back to this. Tribal leaders are not elected by communities, but is carried by bloodline. Okay. So the department says that it consulted one of the stakeholders here, okay, which is the tribal authorities or tribal leaders, which by assumption represents all the community, but they're not elected by that community. And then my question would be, where is the consultation with the community itself? Because I know for a fact, I've been at some seminars that's been arranged by a government itself, where tribal authorities and other stakeholders, CPAs and all of that came together. And I know for a fact that there's some communities who are not satisfied with that system. And there's a conflict between the CPAs and the tribal authorities. So if you say that the land is secure in their hands, then I'm asking, if a person is a paddy, for example, here in Limpopo, in Mokopane, where I'm coming from, or Ndebele for that matter, and they don't stay here, because you said that people who stay on the land, they are now staying in the cities, or they're staying in Cape Town, or they're staying in KwaZulu-Natal. Do they have any legal security to show that this land belongs to them, that they've got ownership? And what is the percentage of ownership? Because if the land is owned by a community, then it should be in a communal trust. And each community member must have a share certificate, or a family for that matter. So that is something that must be addressed. And that is part of the responsibility of government in terms of the constitution that we cannot deny. The second question that I have is, when we look at these tribal areas, because a lot of attention was given to smallholder farmers and the, you know, and farmland and, you know, all of that. But I'm talking here about residential stands, business properties within these communal areas that has been built up by these communities, by individuals, not in a group, but individuals built a house. So do they own that land? No, they don't. The follow-up question on that is, with all the corruption in our country, with money that's being taken from government. You know, we see big mansions popping up within tribal areas, and I move a lot around tribal areas. And obviously, there's no title to that land. So if government one day have to recover money, that is the perfect place to go and hide all that money that has been taken out of government coffers, because you cannot recover that, because the land belongs to government, is managed by a tribal authority or CPA, and the people who stay on it has got only user rights on it, which is determined, which is insecure in the first place, but government want to give lip service by giving those people only, more secure user rights. When we talk about this 700,000 hectares of government land that will be redistributed, it is totally, it's disingenuous for that matter, because in the National Council of Provinces, a specific question was asked whether response was that this land will not be given to those individuals, the women, the youth, the military veterans, and so forth. They will get leases, 30-year or whatever leases. So it will still remain within government's hands. So can the department confirm whether what I'm saying now is in fact true or not? And if you say it's not true, then please prove the opposite. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, thank you very much. Before I give to Honorable Plute, let's note the apology for Deputy Minister Honorable Babela. He loves to be with us, but unfortunately he's joining another meeting where he's deployed by the President. Now, Honorable Plute. Honorable Plute.
Yeah, I've got quite a few questions. So if you indulge me, I'm between devices and through all the notes I made. I also want to share the concern by Honorable Bayes, and I'm sorry to say that, but it feels like we're already moving to getting rid of Article 25 of the Constitution, because it is strange to say. Whilst communal land is incidentally either registered in the name of the state or is considered to be unregistered state land, it is actually not state land. It doesn't make sense. So we need to make sure what is being said there. Another question on the whole issue of communal land governed by the traditional authorities, we see a lot of projects that will be implemented there, but it should also be considered that, you know, the cost of implementing the newly developed national policy on extension and advisory services was found to be far higher than the current budget allocation. My question regarding all this revitalization of irrigation infrastructure: where will the money come from? Are we going to see a bigger budget for this? So that's the second question. On the slide, I think it's slide 6, it speaks about adopted change theory. I would like to know what that adopted change theory is. And on that note, now we're speaking about mass production. If we're speaking about mass production, it's actually just another way of saying we are now moving into the territory of commercial farming. Again, back to the question, are we going to have a budget to be able to drive commercial farming within these traditional authorities? And then a last question regarding, and I've got a few questions more actually. The state land allocation, I just want to know with the skills assessment process. So there will be training done, there's a skills assessment, but I would like to know what happens afterwards. Will there be a kind of a performance management system where women and youth and people with disabilities are assessed afterwards, and whether those land or that land is being utilized correctly? And the question is, needs to be begged whether the department or the government is actually then considering that if an assessment as that is not successful, in other words, let's say a person with disability is not successful on the farm, for what reasons, whatever, will the department be ready to take that land away from that person and give it to someone else who can do it? And I'm not saying it will happen, but I'm asking if it's ready to do that. And then the final question, and I asked this question recently in a debate, there's a study recently by the Institute for Poverty, Land and Agrarian Studies, and it warns that land reform has become the preserve of the well-off, with 44% of beneficiaries being urban-based. Business individuals, taxis, transport operators, former state bureaucrats, and even local politicians. I don't want to go into the politics of it. But according to the study, only 18% of the 66 farms that the Institute studied were allocated to farm workers, many of whom encountered huge obstacles to success and have left their unsuccessful farms to seek unemployment elsewhere. Data gathered on 66 land reform projects across the country found that land reform has shifted from both being pro-poor to being pro-elite. Now, this is a political issue we need to attend to as well. My question is, now remember, also according to the study, 1 out of 10 small, or let's call it communal farmers, actually produce surplus of food. 1 out of 10. My question is, what's the department doing to ensure food security after land is reformed or restituted? And what measures will the department implement, especially with this plan, to ensure that land is not captured by either individuals, bureaucrats, politicians? How will they attend to that? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tute. Honorable Arnold.
Well, thank you, Chairperson.
And where's
mine? Thank you. Let me first thank
Honorable Arnold. Oh, it's Honorable Labushakni and it will be you. Sorry for that. Honorable Kathy.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, Chair, a few of these questions has been asked by the other members. I want to know communal land has been seen critical for food, but for food security, but needs infrastructure-led production investment led by government to realize the potential. I would like to know, what is this led by government mean? Is led by government mean that is the investment from government side? Is it funding? Is it coordinating? What does it really mean? And why must government lead that? And is there a budget for that? Then the communal land and state acquired land as we've seen for growth in agriculture and agri-processing as part of the master plan. How does this fit in this communal land? I'm not talking about the state acquired land. I'm referring to the communal land. How many of these agri hubs and former producer units and so many of these things are close to and within the proximity of communal land to give that support, or will that be extended to these communal lands, or how is this going to realize? Then I would like to know, we had a very interesting and very informative session at the end of last term, on the beginning of this term, I can't remember, from all the provinces on this whole thing of the agri-hubs and the farmer producers support units and all those things. And the picture that was painted in that presentation was, it's actually not going very well with all these support systems, and very few of them are functional. So what is going to happen from the department side to make all these things functional? I don't think by moving and shifting them to the Development Bank of Africa, it will change a lot of things there. So I would like to know what is the plan there. Then I would also like to know what is the time frame for the policy and legislation on communal and state acquired land, and also actually the whole time frame on the whole land redistribution and that has been mentioned there. Then I'm referring to the CPOs, other members also refer to that. We know, and it's been said by the department in various presentations, that there's a very poor support for CPOs. Legislation has been passed on that. And as far as I know, there's not a lot of improvement. So I also think the department must give us some more information on that, but Chairperson should really look into this on a more focused way. Then I would like to know, of the 122 million hectares of land that's in our country, and there was a map of, although it has given all the various kind of productions and things, how many hectares of this land has been earmarked in this master plan for redistribution and production for agriculture? And how much of that for normal urban, or not only urban, but for housing, because it's a stated redistribution is not only for agriculture and production, it's also for housing and in anything else. And then I think I'll stop there first. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Labuskagni. Now it's Honorable Arnold, followed by Honorable Ntsube.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you also for the department for the presentation. Chairperson, just to kick off, in terms of the allocation now, state land allocation for 2020-21, I just want to know why is the Western Cape not there in terms of the allocation of state land? It's just a question that I want to ask in terms of that. But let me say there is an urgent need for to address landlessness and homelessness, and we know the pace and the cost of land reform is one of the major challenges currently of the current government. But let me also say that the rights of people living in communal areas must be guaranteed, and we must make sure that the traditional leaders, in terms of their rights and role in allocation and and redistribution, and also the participation of those traditional leaders is very important. And I think the provincial consultations will make it more relevant in terms of those consultations and participation. The one thing that I want to find out now, and we know that there is a current struggle in terms of the current small farmers. Now, if you also, and I think it's a good thing when you also want those communal areas also to develop. But now, in terms of resources and everything, we know that most of those communal areas, they are underutilized, and there is potential for them to develop. But just in terms of the resources, I think we need also to get into that now. Then there's another point that I have. I think, Chairperson, we need to more interaction with the department in terms of this specific area that was highlighted now today. I think in terms of the policy, the financial aspects and everything that includes now this process, taking this process forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Ntube. Honorable Ntube. Honorable Itumele Ntube. Okay. Let's pass. Honorable Nana. Honorable Nana. Are you struggling again? Oh.
Can you hear me, sir?
Yeah, now I can hear you. But you are driving. That's why you are struggling with the network.
Hello.
Yes, we can hear you. Honorable Nana? Honorable Nana? Honorable Smith, because your hand is up. Honorable Smith?
Yes, thank you, Chair. There's just a question that I wanted to put out that I missed on my first round. I want to know whether it is part of government's plan or the department's plan to transfer the title of that communal land over to communities. If not, why not? And then I would also like to know how much of communal land that's beyond the land that's now in Konyama Trust have been transferred to individuals or communities in communal areas since the start of democracy in 1994. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable, are you back, Honorable Nana? It seems he's not. Honorable Nana? He's in the meeting, but I don't know.
Chairperson, Honorable Kuta, I also have another question.
Let me give the people who didn't speak before, and then I'll come back to you. I've seen your hands.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay.
Can you hear me? I've tried to.
Yes, I can hear you. Yeah, please. Pick. Yeah. You can ask a question, Honorable Nana.
Okay, thanks. Chairperson, I have two issues to raise.
Yes.
The first one relates to crop farmers in Mount Fletcher and Matatiel area. those crop farmers, largely they produce maize, and they have an export market for their maize. I would like to check, to what extent is the department involved in that operation? If the department is involved, what kind of support have those farmers received up to date, and what are the future plans of the department in relation to that operation? And the second question might be a bit irrelevant, but I want to ask it in any event, Chair. I do not know how prevalent this practice is in other provinces, but in the Eastern Cape, rural areas, particularly around Bishop, King Williamstown, and also in your old Transkei along the N2. People have been moving into either thing, plowing fields, and they are building houses. Has the department taken note of this practice? Has the department engaged traditional authorities concerned, and what do they get from whoever they have spoken to? Because as you will imagine, Chairperson, this is fertile land, which really shouldn't be used for human settlement. I'm not saying people shouldn't build houses. They should build houses. But my worry is we're using arable land for human settlement. And I'm sure we don't have much of arable land, particularly in rural areas, that is readily available. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nana. Let me go back to Honorable Clute.
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick question. There was a booklet published by the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform as part of a land audit booklet, actually, that indicated, and the study particularly, or the investigation was regarding private land ownership versus state land ownership. And according to the study, and maybe Honorable Nana will find this interesting, as much as 4 million hectares of land was unaccounted for in the Eastern Cape. That's half of the country's unaccounted extent. My question is the department aware of this unaccounted land, and does this then form part of the land that you mentioned earlier, which is actually part of the communal land? So is this communal land unaccounted, or is this just unaccounted land? We don't know where it belongs to. What's going on there?
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Matibe. Honorable Matibe.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and we really want to appreciate the presentation by the department. I've got just a few inputs, which includes questions, of course. The first one is in relation to the policy that the department said they are still working on, which they have consulted thoroughly and did a study on in Botswana and other African countries. How long can that take to finalize the policy? because I think it's quite important that the area of communal land is directed in terms of policy and its policy finalization. Part of that, they said they will do provincial consultation with traditional leaders. Will it be traditional leaders only, not inclusive of the communities in the traditional leadership? Because traditional councils, by their own nature, they are composed of traditional leaders as well as the community. Because I think that part of the lack of consultation, if it is not taken care of, it might create some challenges moving forward. We appreciate the issue of trying to create infrastructure in rural areas to assist subsistence farming, just to elevate them to a level where they're able to sell the products that they are producing. I just want to check in terms of red meat, as they put it, that they want to upscale the red meat to a level where the value chain also includes areas in communal land. What kind of support are they giving? Because it's one area, if given support, it might assist farmers who are still small scale farmers in communal land to be able to be assisted. The other one, which I think will require that as a committee, we constantly have engagements with the department, is the distribution of these vacant state land. It will require that we get briefings, Chairperson, in terms of the progress, because there is serious hunger for land in our country, and if this distribution, we do look into it and check the progress in relation to it, more especially on a quarterly basis, just to check what is the progress. In Limpopo, they are going to distribute 121,000 plus hectares. So we would need indeed to be able to look into the progress in relation to that distribution. But those are my few remarks that I would want to do. It's quite important because communal land is 13% of the land, and we still got more than 70% of the land that requires distribution. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mathiwe. I've seen Honorable Smith, your hand is still up. Do you still want to ask questions? Honorable Smith? Honorable Smith,
Chair, no, I think it wasn't put down. Sorry, my apology. I'm just going to put it down now.
Okay. No, thanks. Any member who would like to ask questions before I give the back to the department?
Hey, person, there is one other question that I want to, that I left out. Can the department also just give us a brief response in terms of access to water? Because this is now, we know what the current state is in terms of access to water for some of the small farmers that are struggling now, but for this specific one, how are they going to deal with access to water and assistance to those communal areas? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable. Before I give back to department to answer, DM, I have a concern. Your plan, it looks like it seems to be a very, very expensive, because why I'm saying that, Honorable DM,
You are talking about the communal land. That is no infrastructure. That is no. Let's say undeveloped. It's not developed. It's undeveloped. So it's going to be too expensive for most of communal land. They don't have infrastructure to take a communal land to functional commercial farmer. It's very, very expensive. I don't know where departments will go in to take that money. Maybe they have a plan about that. And my another concern, Honorable GM, I've seen in your presentation, you have in the presentation, the department listed the land bank as a development partner. GM, now land bank, it has a serious problem, financial problem. So how are they going to help, whereas they have a serious, they are in a crisis of finance. So I have a problem on that. This is my serious concern. And then the entire plan, it seems hinging to the old agri-parts and the agri-hubs and the farmer production support unit forming the cornerstone. As we know that this agri-parts, the committee previously, DG, you remember even last time, recently fella asked you the presentation so that we can monitor what is happening in the agri-parks. But if we are talking about the agri-parks, I'm seeing something that is going to make the department fail, because for most of the agri-parks that we have, do the oversight on them, they're not functioning. So if you are taking this plan to the agri-parks or to talking, including them, it's going to be a problem, DM. And then my problem, the concern is about the finance. Are you still going to use in the budget for the grant, such as CASP? And how much grant funding will be spent in this project? How much until it functions? Because if we are saying it's only for this current budget, that budget is not going to be enough for that. So I just want to understand how much it's going to take you there. Those are my serious concerns, DM. Maybe you must consider it. And lastly, DM and the DG, when you talk about the communal land, please be very, very careful, because there are a lot of, when you say you are going to give to the community, please don't create something like you did, the department did previously, the issue of a CPA. Now, the CPA vice versa traditional leaders, and there's no any development because they are fighting there. So come with a strategy that when you give to the community, you must be having a strategy, and you must make sure that that strategy, it must work. And you must make sure that these women, youth, people living with a disability, they must be part and parcel of that land. And again, I'm still saying that land that is in the hand of the traditional leaders, I'm afraid the AGM, because you are talking about the land that is there. Some of the land that is in the traditional leaders, the department is already allocated to people that are not living into the very same community. What is going to happen? When you do that, you must be careful, so that it must be a smooth a plan, or smooth must not at the end of the day traditional leaders fight with the government because of these things. Because already some the land, especially in, let's say in my province, the land that are owned by government, that are in the jurisdiction of the traditional leaders, the government has already allocated. And this is the, from time to time, when the traditional leaders are in their meeting, they are discussing about that. So let's be careful about them. And again, before we do this, there are the land that were claimed by the traditional leaders. But even if you give them authority, but you didn't give them a title deed or whatever that is happening there. So please make sure that when you do that, give the land that was claimed before. I can give you an example, like one land that was claimed in the province that I come from, Northwest. The traditional leaders for Batswara Bakamasibi in Moshawan. That land, the traditional leaders claimed that land, the government says the land is yours, but there's nothing in black and white. So that is why the community, those people that are staying, they took that land on their own land. So make sure that you check all these native greetings before you allocated people to that. Thank you very much. But your presentation, it seems if you can implement that presentation, like you say, you put in a presentation, it will help a lot of community in our country.
That's true, Chairperson. But I'll allow the DG and the team to give responses to a number of points raised. You've cut off.
It will. Thank you. Didi?
Thank you, Chairperson. You got cut
can
off.
You hear me? Oh.
Yes, Chair. You got cut off towards
but
the
I'm
end.
Driving. I'm not driving.
Okay. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, thank you for the questions and the enriching comments, but also thank you for the concerns that have been raised by the honorable members with regard to the presentation being thin on what is going to happen about communal land. Chairperson, we do not want to come here and give you two slides to say we are going to consult nationwide. The process is going to go to the provinces, national, to cabinet before the policy is approved. Thank you. So we thought that we should give the committee a holistic view generally about the position of government with regard to communal land. The land that is communal land, we are talking about the 13%. 13% since 1994 and since the adoption of the white paper on land policy in South Africa in 1977. Communal land has never been part of land redistribution. It is the 13%, which is why the land redistribution at the very outset set out a target of distributing at least 30% of white-owned agricultural land. It never included communal land as part of land redistribution. And that's all that we are merely emphasizing, and everything else is very much in line with the Constitution, because we cannot reallocate that which is already occupied, already overcrowded, underdeveloped, and lacks the requisite infrastructure. certainly the communities living on communal land do not have full title. As we said, the land is registered in the name of the state, but they do have rights in land. The policy that we are talking about that has been recommended for development by the presidential panel seeks to then say, you've got 800 odd traditional councils in South Africa, spanning the different former homelands and self-governing territories. Within these 800 plus traditional councils, there are so many communities and villages. But within those communities and villages, there are households, there are individuals, there are widows, there are widowers, there are women-headed households. What is going to happen to the individual rights of people living on that land if government is saying the people who live on that land are the de facto owners of the land? What is going to be the form, the legal form, or the content of the rights that are going to be given to communities, to individuals, or groups of people? Because the is a variety of options available. I don't think government is going to decide on a single instrument. There must be a suite of options available to people to exercise their options, whether it's a share certificate, as it has been suggested, whether it's full title. But we want to shy away from full title. Because if we were to take full title as set out in the current Deeds Registries Act of 1937, not only will the process take 100 years, it will be way too expensive for government to do. Because if it means that we must then get professional land surveyors, survey each and every village and every homestead, register frame diagrams with the Surveyor General, appoint conveyancers to register every title, it will take forever and people will not never actually own this land. But the state won't even afford it. We've seen elsewhere around the world, both in Africa, in Asia, there are different models of registering rights, giving people full legal rights of ownership without the current system, a very, very expensive system that we currently have as a country. So, but those rights does not mean that they don't have the legal substance, that they can be tradable, that they can be transferable, that can they can be bonded by a bank, because they will give those individuals, those families, those households and communities full rights. This is precisely what we want to consult about. When I said we went to on study tours with the House of Traditional Leaders, traditional leaders are very clear about their position. They want the land transferred to traditional leaders. Government has got to take into account all the views of all sections of society. Government can't just take the view of traditional leaders alone. It must take into account the views of communities living on this land. It must take into account the views of a number of other people in this particular area. It must take into account the views of civil society and other organs of state and look at the practicality of what it proposes and its affordability. I like the warning that the chair has given us to say, whatever ultimate model you come up with, it cannot be and must not be a model which will set up communities against traditional leaders, one community against another. And therefore, unlike with the current CPAs, a new policy will have to be very clear in terms of how such conflicts get mediated, how those disputes get resolved in a manner that is not going to require us to go to court, as is the case with the CPAs and trust. So it is all those policy issues that we must consult on, and then cabinet ultimately must then say, this is going to be the policy, having consulted. I'm afraid, honorable members and chairperson, I can't put my head on the block and say it's going to take 3 months or 6 months. If we had our way as a department, we could easily be back, we can go to cabinet by June next year, having consulted with the bill and everything. But this is subject to many other players. But if we had our way, we'll have a policy that is completed, we'll have a bill that we can present to the country through cabinet, and then it follows the normal legislative process, introduction to parliament, and so on and so on. But this is something that is subject to consultation with a wide variety of stakeholders. So that is the process. The issue of traditional councils, what they are and what they are not, perhaps, I heard there's a colleague from COCTA. I think COCTA is best placed to respond to that question. But as far as I know, there is a traditional leadership framework act. There is a traditional courts framework legislation that governs the roles and responsibilities of those institutions. From our side, we know that in terms of the law, traditional councils are legal, are public entities. So by just simply transferring to them, we will not have transferred the rights to the people, to the communities and individuals. But those are issues that are subject to consultations with the traditional leaders. There is no intention for the state to be a perpetual owner of the land. As a matter of fact, as we speak, honorable members, we know that since 2019 and since 2009-2010, the state has only acquired land for land redistribution purposes, and all of that land is owned by the state and the land is leased to communities. What we are busy finalizing at the present moment, and in due time the minister will make that announcement, is allowing people to be assisted by the state through the land redistribution program to have full title to the land. So land reform is not just about the state owning the land. I think land ownership, the leasehold, will be there as just part one of the mechanisms. But definitely, for labor tenants, we are transferring full title. For farm dwellers, we are transferring full title. We are finalizing new grant instruments that can also be blended with the loan finance, where farmers who want to acquire land in their own name, not in the aim of the state, can be allowed to apply and have full title to the land. So we are finalizing that. So even with this land, the 700,000 hectares, as it is as we speak, the state and lease and disposal policy do allow people to exercise an option to buy. Even the 2.2 million hectares we've acquired since 2006 to date through the land redistribution process, the proactive land acquisition strategy, the policy allows for people to exercise an option to buy that land. So those options are there. Perhaps we need to be quite aggressive in communicating to the people these options, allowing them to exercise them, but nothing prevents them from exercising that land, that right to get the land to be transferred in their name. We have seen the study done by, the lease agreement indeed will have, as it is now, the current lease policy. That provides for people to be removed from the land. There will be certain conditions. If we give you, as part of these 800 farms of state land, we are giving you this land. Now, if you are then going to sublease this land, to make easy money, then we're going to remove you. So the lease is a contractual agreement between the lessee and the state. So you will have to comply with those conditions. But the state is not going to, for frivolous reasons, as it might happen in some instances now, just simply remove you for reasons that have got nothing to do with you or beyond your control. So there will be those kind of contractual arrangements. The farmers that are going to be given this land, the 700 hectares, are going to be given a startup support. That's a commitment we have made, that there will be a startup as with regards to animal farmers, livestock farmers, let me put it that way. We will be giving them startup support, not just the training, but we'll be giving them the animal vaccines. We will make all of those accessible to them. But we are going to train thousands of young people to play a role of, call them para-animal health officials in the former homelands, because that keeping system has largely collapsed in many areas. And we are very thin on veterinary services in those particular areas. We're also very thin on extension support services. But we've got a number of unemployed young graduates. We've got a number of unemployed youth, whom through our entities as a department, we want to train so that they can inoculate a cow, a sheep, or a goat. They can see all the signs. They reduce mortality rates. So all of those things, we have got these state entities. In fact, we as we speak, we are negotiating, signing contractual arrangements with the state entities to say, among the things you do in terms of your legislation, these are your obligations towards the department. And the department, through the funds allocated to it, will make those resources to the entities like the Agricultural Marketing Council, the ARC, the OPP, to be able to bring these services closer to those communities. And indeed, we will decentralize them. If you look at the production schemes, it is true that they are very much aligned to your district development model. We do believe that the district development model is the future. If all of us as various government departments can coalesce around a plan at a district level as all three spheres, we believe that we can have maximum impact by crowding in our public resources as different departments in that particular space, and we'll see much more bigger impact than each and every one of us as separate department working in different parts. We do believe that the district development model will also go a long way towards assisting us to mobilize the resources that are required for some of this infrastructure. For instance, our own department has mapped all the 44 districts in the country, including the 8 metros. We are working very closely with the Department of Cooperative Governance that is driving the district development model. So as we decentralize the production schemes, not the agri-parks, the production schemes, as we decentralize them, bringing services to the people, we at a national level are already in discussions with the department such as your water affairs, who have a master plan. We now, as we sit here, we know what are the plans of the department for the next 25 years. But they also are telling us that there is water distribution or water allocation inequity in the agricultural sector. They say the agricultural sector uses about 65% of the country's water. But about 99%, 95% of that water is used by commercial farmers. That is why you then need very radical and serious water reform. so that these farmers that we are talking about can have access to those water resources. We cannot have 65% of the country's water only being used by 95% of the country's water being used by just about 30,000 commercial farmers. And not even the 30,000, not all of them have got all of the water rights. The number is even probably fewer. So this is one of the things that that this plan seeks to address. So we are discussing with our individual sister departments, such as water, but we are also discussing with departments that are buying food as part of their function, such as the Department of Defense. There is a discussion and agreement, for instance, between the Department of Defense that buys food for the soldiers. We've got military bases all over the country. Where does the defense buy food for the soldiers? Be it fruits, be it meat, be it grains, and so on. So those are potential customers for our farmers. We are discussing with correctional services to buy food, meat, and all of those other items from our farmers. We have never done that before, but these are the things we want to do. We'll have similar discussions with social development, with health, and so on, so that part of the public money, other than social grants that go to these areas, some of the public spend procuring some of these services can go to these communities to improve income and have more money circulating in those local economies. We don't believe that the department on its own can fund this whole plan. But we do believe that the department, if it can rationalize its programs, not to have too many programs scattered all over the place, which results in very, very limited impact on the ground. If we can consolidate all our programs as we are doing now around the agriculture and agro-processing master plan, we can achieve double, not possibly quadruple, the size of impact we are achieving with our budget if we downscale, streamline, focus our programs. But of course, we have got partner or sister departments, as I've mentioned. We also have the private sector that is coming to the party. I mentioned Tiger Brands. There are many others that are coming to the party. Your Pick and Pay, even your Woolworths, your Clover Dairies, and all of those other companies are coming to provide not only input. Commercial banks are saying to us, government, we are willing to partner with you. We will match you rand for rand. If you, government, put R1 billion a year, we as commercial banks will put R1 billion a year for the next 15 years to speed up land reform, to support farmers. So this is not just about the department alone. It is a social compact of government, private sector, organized agriculture, civil society, commodity organization, farmers organizations, and communities. So it is a broad social compact. We are very confident that with energy and focus, this plan can work. So yes, we've taken the issue of the funding into account. Now, the issue of the mushrooming of call it very top-notch housing development in the former homeland, some of it along the street. I mean, if you fly to Umtata, you look at some of these things, but it's all over the country. You go to KZN, you go into the Enri on the south, you see those houses on top there overlooking the sea. So we have seen some people with money invading land, not only just state land. Some of these invasions, we see them on the land we have restored. Just today, I was dealing with an invasion of land we've acquired for land redistribution. The farmer failed to farm. He returned the farm to the department. Some people are now cutting up plots on this land. So we must now get an interdict prevent those people from occupying that land. So we've got a very serious problem of land invasion. But come back to the communal areas. The problem there is that we need to find a way with traditional leaders to implement SPLUMA on communal land, whatever the issues are, whatever the differences are. Because SPLUMA is going to help traditional councils, traditional communities, and local municipalities to do proper zoning of land. So that land that is zoned for agriculture cannot be used for human settlements or any other use. We are unable to implement SPLUMA on communal land because there is a stalemate between the department on the one hand and traditional leaders on the other, because they believe that they were not properly consulted when SPLUMA was developed into law, and they believe that they should play a much more bigger role in the decision making insofar as what kind of development direction the area under their jurisdiction in a particular local community they want to have a bigger say on those processes. So, but we believe that SPLUMA could be a solution in terms of zoning, improving relationships between traditional councils and local councils will go a long way in terms of limiting some of these challenges. We must acknowledge that our single biggest problem at the present moment are the conflicts in the common property institutions, such as the CPAs and the trusts, largely those that have got tracts and tracts and tracts of land all over the country that has been returned through the restitution process. There's a lot of conflict there. People are taking each other to court. Others are under administration. There are allegations of corruption. Some of the land, as much as we bought it for hundreds of millions of rand, some communities have decided to lease the same land back to the former owners, but they don't share the rental and whatever accrues from the use of that land by the former owners with the rest of that community, leading into all sorts of social conflicts. Chairperson, the comment that we should be coming back to this committee to report more regularly, at least on a quarterly basis, not only, Chairperson, on the rollout plan and the progress we are making with regard to the allocation of the 700,000 hectares. We want to come and report also in the implementation of the agriculture and agro-processing master plan, because these will impact in your areas. You are on the ground. You have got constituencies. We want to get feedback from yourself so that we can improve on these plans. Unless Chairperson have omitted very specific questions, what is clear to us, there's a big distinction between agri-parks and the agriculture and agro-processing master plan. They are distinct. Obviously, the infrastructure we have built, that is the farmer production support units in different parts of the country, we can't ignore that infrastructure. We've got to enhance it. We can see how best it can be part, an integral part of the production schemes. But certainly, AgriParks and the AMP are two separate. The AMP and its production schemes is a total system, fully operational. Production scheme are going to become the future pre- and post-settlement support for all our farmers across the board throughout the country. With regard to the land book, to the land audit booklet, we must just verify that, but usually we are talking about the land that is unaccounted for. It could be land that is unsurveyed and unregistered. But the number is quite frightening, 4 million hectares. I think we'll have to check it and we can respond. The partnership with the land bank. The partnership, I think, yes, we know the land bank has been through a lot of problems. We are not banking on the land bank financing the farmers. But there's a lot of leverage the bank has in a number of areas. For instance, this partnership with the Tiger Brands is facilitated by the land bank. if there's any money that is going to be involved in this process, it's going to be money coming from the private sector. It's going to be money coming from the department, not so much from the land bank. But we are working together with the land bank in developing new funding models for land redistribution, for farmer support, be it acquisition of inputs, mechanization, and the like. Chairperson, I think I should stop here. We've tried to respond to those questions, unless there's a burning issue that I did not respond to. But I tried to summarize the 37 questions that you asked. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DG. For responding to our questions, you, whether do you have any follow-up question after the DG respond to 38 questions that we have asked? Members?
I'm covered, sir.
Covered. You are covered. All of you are covered.
Yeah, we're covered. I'm covered, Jefferson.
Oh, okay. When you are covered, it means Honorable Smith is covered. Honorable Smith, are you covered so that
I'm covered. Do... Thank you.
Okay. Before I conclude the meeting, let me give to the DM to say something before we close the meeting.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and I must also thank the members of the committee from your side, and thank our DG, particularly on the way he responded to the questions. In thanking you, Chairperson, for guiding us in this meeting, the road ahead is very long, and if we work together, it is going to be reached the point where we can say, indeed, land redistribution is a reality and is happening in South Africa under difficult circumstances. And I want to wish your members the time ahead. Land issues are very dicey and very dangerous at times. People have died because of land. So how we solve this problem, it is in the interest not only of those who are in rural areas where a population of close to 60 million people and the stability on the question of land is very, very critical. And the support that we shall receive from the department, from the committee, is going to guide us to travel this difficult journey this time around. So I thank you very much for having given us and myself in particular the opportunity to be listening to the debates and the questions. Thank you very much, Chen.
Thank you very much, DG. DM. For being with us the whole day and all the time you are with us, we thank you for taking us serious as the committee. Not necessary when the minister or some another deputy is not there, they are not taking us serious. But when you share this work together, we really appreciate it for that. Really, even when we do an oversight, we'll be having a courage that at least the department head, minister, or the deputy minister are always be with the officials when they they present to us. So thank you very much. When I conclude, I just want to put the resolution, DG and DM, that the department is commended for this achievement thus far, especially on supporting the farmers and distributing the land. We really appreciate the department to do that. And then they must continue to do that, to give land to people who can be productive and continue to contribute to the actively economy of our country, because agriculture is one of the pillars that can contribute to the, our economy. So we really appreciated that. And Didi, when you present there, you said you put your head on your block, on the block, to say you cannot give the beneficiary land that is not that does not have the right of water. We really want to see that, because if you give the beneficiary the land without the water right, it's going to be a serious crisis. Like before, it was happening. And I just want to say, DM, please, as the minister and you, and the D, both of you, to consider and take the necessary steps towards the key recommendation of the presidential advisory panel on the land reform and agriculture, to accelerate and redistribute, expand agriculture production and transform industry. Please take it serious, that one. And the department is reminded that of the president's state address, when the president, Honorable Matamela Ramaphosa, indicated that government will allocate land and for the settlement and the land redistribution claim and agriculture production, prioritizing training and allocating of land to youth, women, people with disability, and those who have been farming on the communal land, they must be given a chance, and which the ones that are ready, they must give a chance to expand their operation. But the TG, he said, when he presented, he said they're going to assist them. Thank you very much for that. We really thank you for the opportunity, DM, and the department. You are officially released, but before you release the DM, especially DG, I've asked a question, or maybe it was a comment, when I talk about the land of Bakare Bahamasivi in Mushawani. Can you check for us what is happening? Because sometimes I'm afraid to go to my constituency because the traditional council will be stopping me, asking me about this land or what is happening, because people crept that land in the hands of the traditional leaders. We don't want that situation. So check for me what is happening about that land. And secondly, that I want DM and DG to check. In the village of Kabe in Mafikeng, there is a farm that was belong to Mr. Slimi. That farm, it was given to back to Mr. Slimi, but it's not the whole farm. It was divided and it's given the very same people who grabbed that land during that era, that apartheid era. It was, they were still there. They cut that farm into pieces so that they can accommodate those people. So please, can you check it for me again? What is happening, Gigi, about that? Why they don't give the back, that farm, the whole farm, to back to Mr. Slimi Kokabe at Kade Village? So with this few words, I think today we have fruitful meeting, Honorable DM and DG. So thank you very much. You are released to this meeting, and the members of the committee can stay
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. We will give you a report on the issues you've raised. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Take care. Don't go around the village. There is a COVID. Take care of yourself.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Bye-bye.
Smith, you must not go, you. Oh, because now you have asked a lot of questions, you are satisfied, now you want to go. You still have an hour to stay.
Are we leaving now?
You are not the DG, Smith.
Or do you want to be a DM?
No, you want to be a DG.
Honorable Smith?
Smith want to be a DG. I will appoint him.
No, thank you, Chair. I think I enjoy the side of the table.
you want to be a DM of Mogalakwena.
I can be the mayor.
We'll give him a, he must be a director general of Limpopo. We'll give
Mogalakwena.
No, go not to Mogalakwena.
Members, Aska, hey, we are tired. Anyway, let me not say we are tired.
Chair.
What is, yes?
We do not correct, Chair. We do not form a quorum.
So, okay.
the minutes will have to stand over until the next meeting.
No problem.
How many members are we now?
We are correcting. It's Honorable Mudise, Honorable Machive, Honorable Arnold.
We only have five provinces.
Huh?
We only have four. Chair, we only have four provinces present. We need five provinces.
Maybe we are one province.
No, I understand. No problem. We'll adopt the minutes in the next meeting. Thank you very much, members.
Chair,
and this issue of land redistribution, we must make follow up on it. It's a very serious concern to everybody.
Okay.
So, ma'am, sir?
Honorable
Smith?
Yes, Honorable Chair, yeah. Did we get clarity on this matter of approving the minutes according to provinces? Because if we remember, we were sitting about this issue before. Whether it is provinces or whether it's individuals, because when it's provinces, there needs to be a mandate from a province, and that was my question around it. So we need to get this thing around the quorum sorted out, please, Chair.
Okay.
I'm concerned about that because when it is a provincial vote, it comes with a mandate from a province. And the province is not sitting in on the minutes of the meeting. We are sitting in as members of the committee. So if we can just sort that out. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, your point is noted, Honorable Smith. So anything before I close the meeting, members? You are okay?
So exhausted.
Okay. Thank you very much, members. For attending this meeting. This meeting is officially adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Mogalakwena. Bye-bye.